In celebration of Earth Day, we gather with a chant of Native Americans and with these words from the Reverend Barbara Peskin. For the beauty of the earth, this spinning blue-green ball, yes, Gaia, mother of everything, we walk gently across your back to come together again in this place, to remember how we can live, to remember who we are, and to create how we will be. Gaia, our home, in the lap in which we live, welcome us. And welcome again to all of you. I'd like to share with you words of the poet Wendell Berry. His reading is entitled Water. I was born in a drought year. That summer my mother waited in the house, enclosed in the sun and the dry, ceaseless wind, for the men to come back in the evenings, bringing water from a distant spring. Veins of leaves ran dry, roots shrank. In all my life I have dreaded the return of that year. Sure that it is still there somewhere, like a dead enemy soul. Fear of dust is in my mouth and is always with me, and I am the faithful husband of the rain. I love the water of wells and springs and the tastes of roofs and the water cisterns. I am a dry man whose thirst is praise of clouds and whose mind is something of a cup. My sweetness is to wake in the night after the days of heat, hearing the rain. If you were with us last Sunday in church, you participated in child dedication ceremony. And in that ceremony, I said these words. Science tells us that all life comes from the waters. It is water that sustains our life. It is water that brings forth new life in barren lands. And therefore, it is with water that we dedicate our children. And then I dipped my fingers in a beautiful silver bowl of clean water and placed a few drops on the forehead of each child. Religions, from the most primitive and ancient to those of the present day, have used and continue to use water for blessing for spiritual cleansing, for initiation. You know, walk into any Catholic church today, and what do you find by the door? Holy water. Walk into a Baptist church today, and what do you find? A pool to be filled with water for immersion baptism. The Native Americans, as we recognized in song today, saw the sea and the river and the lakes as our sisters and brothers. God, as you just sang, was the great musician, the earth a dusty drum, and the rain the drumsticks that made the music that called new life to come forth. In various ways, these religions and many others and their rituals remind us that water is sacred. It is a gift to us, essential to our lives. Today, science teaches us much the same thing. We search with highly technical instruments, distant planets, for any sign of what? Water. For then there might be the possibility of life. We know that without water there is no life. People can survive months, some weeks, and some even months without food. But after just one day without water, most humans are in desperate shape. We are water. More than 60% of our bodies, 70% of our brains, 90% of our lungs are water. We constantly need to take in water for our bodies to function. Like other cultures that lived a simple existence close to nature, the Native Americans understood the gift of water, the blessing of the rain and the river. They depended on the natural cycle and flow of the waters. Their lives were greatly affected when there was drought. But we in this developed Western world no longer live close to the earth, and we forget what ancient faiths and modern science teaches us. Can you even imagine, really imagine, what it would be like to live your life without a readily available and affordable supply of clean water? I'm not really sure that I can. In our country, having access to water is simply something we so take for granted. Having sinks in our kitchens and in our bathrooms, showers and tubs, outside faucets to water our gardens, these are things to which we really don't give a second thought. But for some in the world, such luxury is hardly imaginable. We turn on the tap and let the water run as we brush our teeth and take long showers. We run our washing machines and our dishwashers without a thought of what it would be like to live our lives without a supply of water. We don't worry or have to worry about what diseases we may contract by drinking the only water that we have to drink. I live in a city where water just seems runs through the pipes in the street and seems endless. And I know that there are a few people here in Stowe that do have some idea of what living without water might be like. Those of you in Harvard Acres, where the water company went bankrupt and the water lines were not being fixed, experienced a bit of a panic of the potential of a home without a supply of water. But the drilling trucks were there digging wells, and people soon figured out how to solve the problems of water supply. And if you are a garden or a green lawn or a car washing enthusiast, you may have endured water restrictions, limiting your engagement in these activities. And with the dry winter that we've had this year, many predict we will have them again. Climate change means that here and around the world, water supplies will be even less dependable than they were in the past. There have been great droughts in our history, dust bowls where the rain didn't come and the wells dried up. In these places and in time, these times, the people who have gone through those experiences thought more about water. Even today, in places with well-established water systems, we are learning that the supply of water is not endless. Perhaps you saw, as I did on the news just this past week, reports that in Texas there are entire communities where the reservoirs have completely dried up, and they now depend upon water being brought to their community in tanker trucks. As Wendell Berry reminds us, if you go through the experience of a drought, your attitude about water changes forever. Yes, there have been some droughts and even some failures of wells and water systems in our country. But we have not experienced anything like what those in other parts of the world are experiencing. We really have little appreciation of what it is truly like to live with water scarcity and contamination. We're used to being provided clean water at low cost, and it's difficult to comprehend what it could be like to live in a place where clean water is either unavailable or too expensive. You heard this morning the story of the Ethiopian village where children and women had to carry heavy jugs miles just to get any water for their homes. And if you think about it, it really is just an accident of history and geography that that place is not Stowe or Acton or Maynard, Massachusetts. According to the World Health Organization, more than 1.2 billion people worldwide go without access to clean drinking water. Over 5 million, mostly children in Africa and Asia, die annually from easily preventable water-related diseases. By the year 2025, according to the UN's Food and Agricultural Organization, 1.8 million people will be living in regions with absolute water scarcity, and two-thirds of the world's population will be living under water stress conditions. This is a public health crisis, but because we are not living it, we're not really focused upon it. Some have argued that the privatization of water supplies in these places will solve the problem, and there have been some successes, but far too many situations when this sort of operation just turned into one more way where large international corporations have taken advantage of local people and trampled on their rights. Doesn't it seem morally wrong to you that we from the developed West can go into poor countries and sell the people back their own water at prices that they can't afford? And it gets worse. In many countries, large businesses that consume great amounts of water, these are massive global agricultural businesses or massive international mining operations, they've been given government contracts that allow them to divert the water that the people need to make their investors money. Dams are built to provide energy, but in doing so, they rob people of their water. Industrial globalization is robbing people's water. Today, 90% of human water is used for industrial purposes, 70% being used exclusively for large-scale agriculture and factory farming. Kendra Okonski, who's the editor of the Water Revolution, observed, "In most poor countries today, governments perpetuate water scarcity, which harms both people and the environment. They fail to provide water to the poor, but provide massive subsidies for water use by vested interests such as big landowners." How is it that people can allow a government to sell to foreign moneymakers the basic rights of its people to water? And that is what's happening in many places. But it does not have to be that way. Frank Joseph Smecker, in an article entitled "Depraved Injustice in the Privatization of the Global Fresh Water," writes, "If the dominant economic mode were to shift gears to one that wasn't defined globally and predicated upon the funneling of resources to the producer rather than the community, the availability of water would be much different. If community-scale projects and strict environmental protection policies were implemented to define our economic behavior, then I'm quite sure billions of people would not be facing such dire water-related plights." From our ancient faiths and our modern science, we know that the water that falls on the earth, that flows in the streams, that bubbles up from the ground, is indeed sacred to us. It belongs to us all. Nothing except the air we breathe is as essential to sustain our lives. We know, like all gifts that we enjoy, gifts given to us that we did nothing to earn, we need to care for it, protect it, use it wisely, and share it justly. As a faith tradition, we are a justice-seeking people. And this crisis of water availability is so clearly a social justice issue. We are a tradition that recognizes the equal worth and dignity of every individual. And as such, we are called to speak out when our brothers and sisters around the globe are being denied their most basic of rights. We're called to show justice, equity, and compassion to our fellow human beings through our words and our deeds. You know, we are such truly fortunate people. We have so much, not because of anything we did to earn it, but because of where we were born and where we live. It could just as easily have been us who were without clean water. And it may yet be. The problem is increasing. Climate change and policies of globalized international economies are exacerbating it. The problem is coming our way. You know, those people in Texas who don't have any water in their reservoir and have to truck in all the water, if you saw that interview, they didn't think it would ever be them. We stand in a tradition of recognizing that in a society, in a world, that what happens to the least among us really happens to all of us. And all of us bear some responsibility to help make things better for those who by accident of birth are the least. The lack of clean, available water is causing untold suffering and hardship in our world. But there are things, actually many things, that we can do. It is not beyond our reach to help. The first thing we can do is not take for granted what we have and use our water resources wisely. You can teach your children to conserve by reminding them not to leave the water running when they brush their teeth. You know, it sounds like such a small thing, yet it plants in their minds the importance of conserving. But did you know what I discovered when I looked further into it? A family of four brushing their teeth twice a day loses 24 gallons a day of water by letting the water run. That's 8,760 gallons of water a year. If a family in Africa were to have that, they would be thrilled to have that much water to live on, and they would have plenty extra to share with their neighbors just from what runs down our sink when we leave the water running, brushing our teeth. But what can we do to directly help those people who are suffering from a lack of available clean water? Well, look at what a few people have done. One person and one linking together several communities and raising the funds to do what's done in this African village. What we've helped doing in India and villages there. These kind of things profoundly change people's lives. There are many efforts like these which we can support and become involved with. There are also policy positions that need to be taken. Water needs to be firmly recognized as a basic human right. The United Nations has declared this, but governments and huge industrial companies have failed to observe it. Our own government needs to be more proactive in this area and have a more water-conscious foreign policy. You know, think about what we could do if instead of waging war, we dug wells and or set up filtration systems or helped with sanitation so that water supplies were not polluted. How profound the difference would be if we were seen as a nation that brings water to dry land rather than one that wages war and brings destruction. This Sunday, we in particular turn our attention to the Unitarian Universalist Service Committee. It's their Justice Sunday, and I encourage you to learn more about them and to support their work. And you'll note on the back of your order of service, there's information and a website that you could take a look at. On our behalf, the service committee has made a strong commitment to the human right to water. In a sermon for this Sunday, the Reverend Jim Eller, who's co-founder of the Unitarian Universalist Earth Ministries and an avid supporter of the service committee's work, writes, "By working with international partner organizations, the Unitarian Universalist Service Committee works to enhance the equitable access to safe and affordable water for all people. On a global scale, the Unitarian Universalist Service Committee is a relatively small organization. It's not the United Nations, the International Red Cross, or Oxfam. But it is a visionary and effective organization. As a Unitarian Universalist Service Committee volunteer said recently, the Service Committee does not build all the wells the world needs, although we contribute to the building of many. What we really are about is making sure that once a well is built in a community, everyone has a right to share in the water it brings forth. The Unitarian Universalist Service Committee is dedicated to advancing human rights and social justice, and defending the right to water is central to their work on environmental justice. So what is it that's asked of us this Sunday, this Earth Day Sunday, this Justice Sunday? Well, first, we're asked to engage in the very difficult spiritual exercise of putting ourselves in another's place, of seeing the world without our blinders of privilege on. We're asked to remember again that but for the luck of history or geography, we could be in the difficult position. And indeed, unless there is some action taken, we might be. We're asked to live our lives in ways that use the resources of our planet wisely. We're asked to recognize that there is no more basic human right than the right to clean water. And we're asked to do what we can do to make that a reality for everyone on this planet. We're asked to support the weak, to protect their rights against the strong, who take away what's now called their blue gold to make profits for already rich people. We're asked to promote an equal access to the gifts Mother Earth has given to all her children. You know, think about it. This is such an incredible planet, and she can provide for us all if we care for her, if we prevent greed from destroying her, if we live our lives in harmony and oneness with her, and with the sacred attention to the needs of those who have yet to receive the full benefits of her gifts. Thank you.